Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everyone. Welcome again to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun. This is Peter Schiff, your host for the next hour, president of Euro Pacific Capital. Again, reminding you, this show can be heard live every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, on shortwave radio 5.07 megahertz, and on my website, www.europac.net, EUROPAC.net. And also, the show is always rebroadcast on Saturday evenings, 11:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Pacific, on shortwave 9.32 megahertz. And as always, the shows are available in their entirety for download on the website at www.europac.net. They are MP3 format, and they can be downloaded and replayed on any player at your leisure. And I would encourage you, if you're a new listener, to visit the archives and to go back and play some of these older episodes. I think it's very important for people to see, you know, what I've been saying, or hear, rather, what I've been saying for the past almost 2 years, so they can see the accuracy of the forecast, so they can try to make a judgment as to whether or not they want to believe what I'm saying. In any event, a lot to talk about today. I think in particular, you know, it looks to me that based on the data that's coming out, that Wall Street is finally beginning to embrace the economic slowdown, and that the Fed potentially, despite its rhetoric, is just about finished when it comes to the voluntary interest rate hikes. And I'm saying voluntary, although I still think that they didn't want to raise them as high as they did. But they, you know, they recognize that they had to. But I do think that the Fed is likely to pause. I think the next rate hike is probably going to come, the next quarter point. But then I think we could see a pause for some time. And, Wall Street obviously might think that, the next move in interest rates will be down. And I think that rates are going to have to go a lot higher despite the pause. But if we do get a pause, that could be the catalyst for a rally. You know, the beige book that we came out today, I thought was very weak based on what was said. I also thought it was very, they talked about not only price pressures, but wage pressures. And I thought it was a pretty bad report. I mean, the market didn't necessarily react to it. The dollar certainly did, although the dollar came into the day very, very weak, I think based on some of the overnight comments out of Japan and China. But the beige book, was a catalyst for the dollar to make new lows after it was released. But I think that ultimately, if there is this perception now that the economy is in fact slowing, I think the initial result could be a rise from here in the stock market. Now, I think any rise in the U.S. stock market will be more than overshadowed rather by the rises in the foreign markets, and in particular the old economy, energy, natural resource, mining, inflation-sensitive part of the market. In fact, that was a segment that did the best today. You know, the technology sector continues to lag. You know, we had Amazon was down about 22% today. We had a bad week. A lot of bad earnings coming out of other companies. eBay got clobbered. Yahoo got clobbered. Dell. You know, these old stocks that people have been holding on to since 1999, 2000 are continuing to move lower, and I would expect that to be the case. But the real basic stocks that very few Americans own are the ones that are going to do well, at least for the time being. Because I think ultimately the embrace the slowdown attitude on Wall Street is going to change for two reasons. One, the slowdown is going to be a lot worse than people think. See, people are hoping for just the slowdown, but that economic growth continues. What most people don't understand is it's not going to be a slowdown, it's going to be a contraction. The economy is actually going to shrink. It's not just going to, the growth rate is not just going to slow, it's going to contract. So Wall Street is underestimating the extent to which the economy is going to contract or slow. And number two, again, people continue to make the assumption or act on the assumption that a slowing economy is somehow going to contain inflation. And as I've written and as I've said in this program, that's not the case. In fact, if anything, the slowing economy will exacerbate inflation as it's measured by consumer prices. So Wall Street is wrong on both accounts. But in the meantime, the markets to me look like they're likely to rally. The utility index looks extremely positive. And, despite the big drop in UPS the other day, I mean, the transports are okay. I mean, I think we could see a rally. But I think more importantly, we're going to see a rally in the types of stocks that we're buying at Euro Pacific Capital. We've seen big moves up in our stocks in the last few days, and I think that's going to continue. And I think, in the precious metals arena, I think we've seen the lows in both gold and silver. To me, the chart patterns look very good. I think we could see explosive moves up to the upside in both gold and silver in the days and weeks ahead. I think the chart patterns look very good, and the fundamentals are lining up. If you're on the fence, if you're looking to buy precious metals and you're waiting for that big drop to buy more, I think you forget about waiting. I think you're more likely to pay up for them if you wait. I think you just take the price that's there and be glad that you got it. I think the prices are going higher. I think the same is true for the dollar. The U.S. dollar looks very weak. I think the strongest looking currency right now is the Australian dollar. The Australian dollar is very close to making a 52-week high. And who would have thought that, just a month or two ago? But the Australian dollar is back over 76 cents. The 52-week high is under 78 cents. So the currency looks really strong. The dollar in general looks weak. We had weakness across the board. I think the dollar had its biggest drop today in some time. And again, that's another reason to hurry up and move money into the types of stocks that we've been recommending. Oil prices continue to look strong, and now we finally had a big surge in natural gas prices, thanks to the energy demand because of the heat in California and other parts of the country. And that's going to be replaced by the winter demand. But I think natural gas prices have seen their lows. We've been buying some of these royalty trusts for our clients, particularly those that are focused on natural gas. Some of these stocks have had huge jumps in the last couple of days. Anybody who's followed our advice and bought these stocks in the last couple of months is in a very good position. But it's not too late. These stocks are still well below where they were 7, 8, 9 months ago. You need to buy these stocks before they make new highs. And I said, so I think the markets are shaping up for a rally, but the best way to play it is not going to be, I think, in the U.S. market. I think the U.S. market will continue to lag not only foreign markets, but lag the price of gold. You know, the Dow Jones is still down about 15% on the year priced in gold. And while it looks to me like the market's going to rise in dollars, I do not think the market's going to rise in terms of gold. I think the U.S. market is going to continue to lose real value in real money. And it's only because of inflation that you're going to see an increase in the U.S. averages. But I think you can still get very, very good returns in the foreign markets. Anyway, let me remind everybody the number to call. The lines are open if you want to ask a question, interject a comment. The number to call toll-free to participate in the show is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597 is the number to call. Looking on the website, all of my recent CNBC Bloomberg appearances have been updated on the website. So if you missed any of the live broadcasts, you have a chance to see them on the website under video interviews. So check them out. There's some very good exchanges in some of those shows. And interestingly, it seems like I'm getting through to some people. More people are starting to appreciate some of the points that I'm making and seeing it my way. And I think that you'll be surprised at that, because I think when I first started doing these programs, you know, there was a lot more disagreement, a lot more hostility. Now there's a lot more camaraderie. So I think my point of view is starting to come across. Also, you know, I continue to make slow and steady progress on my book. Just to update you that I am working on this book. The deadline to get it to the publishers is at the end, I think, of September. So I've got two more months. I've got August and September. I've got the first six chapters written, which is, I don't know if that's quite half the book, but I'm working on it feverishly to get this thing done. And the expected date of publication for the book is March of next year. So it's still about 9 months away, but that's not that long. That's not that long in the publishing biz. But I've got two more months to get the book written. Hopefully when it's written and it's on the shelves, everybody will buy a copy. I need to get as many books sold. I don't make that much money per book, actually. There's really not much in it. Hopefully some people will buy the book and learn something and become an account of your a client of Euro Pacific Capital. That's where, you know, I have a chance to make some money. But I want to get the book to sell, because if people go out and buy it, it has a chance that, you know, it could pop up on one of these bestseller lists somewhere, and then the book could take on a life of its own once people start to notice it. Because I think it's going to be a very informative book, and it's going to be very unique in the perspective in which it was written. You know, there are a lot of books out there written by people who are talking about the problems of the U.S. economy, but not from my particular perspective and with my take on it. And hopefully the book will be written in such a way that the problems will be understandable to the average reader in a way that he can really get his thinking teeth into it and appreciate the magnitude of these problems, and not only appreciate the magnitude of the problems, but understand how important it is to do something about it for themselves. And not only that they should do something about it, but there's a way to do something about it, that there is a roadmap here. There's a way to protect wealth. That they don't, you know, people are not powerless in this regard. You don't have to watch your wealth evaporate. You can take affirmative steps to protect yourself. Now, certainly the people who are listening to this broadcast are in better shape than the people who are just going to read the book 9 months from now, because there could be a significant amount of damage done between now and the next 9 months, the U.S. dollar. I mean, judging by the way the charts are shaping up right now, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a substantial decline in the dollar between now and the end of the year. And by the time this book comes out in March, I mean, who knows, the dollar could be in free fall. So the key is that, you know, don't wait, don't procrastinate, you know, this decision or this type of action. We need to get money out of the dollar, and we need to do it as soon as possible, because the sooner we get rid of our dollars and accumulate other assets, the sooner that we've protected our wealth. You know, as your wealth evaporates, you have a smaller and smaller fortune to protect. And when you do that, you know, when you accumulate foreign assets, as the dollar loses, the quantity of assets you accumulate is diminished, and so is the income potential from those assets. So the sooner that we can act, the better. Again, let me give out that telephone number to call. There's no, right now the lines are open. It's 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. I know also on a geopolitical front, you know, what's happening over there in Lebanon and with Israel, on top of the situation in the Middle East prior to these events is adding additional uncertainty to the world. All this uncertainty, I believe, is going to work in favor of gold and silver and to the detriment of the U.S. dollar. And remember, you know, the more encumbered America becomes, the more problems there are in the world, the more of our resources are drawn upon. You know, and of course, the United States, in order to mobilize, in order to be involved internationally, it requires us to borrow additional money. It's not that we can finance this domestically. We can't. We rely on the rest of the world to finance it. And so the more there are commitments or there are draws on our resources, the more funds we have to borrow around the world. And again, the more the world is uncertain about our economy and how it's going to react. You know, if you look at the news stories that I've been posting on our website, in particular, the ones about the real estate market. I mean, I think this is a situation that is rapidly unfolding the way that I have been predicting it. But I think you can look now at the stories in the major markets. We're now seeing year-on-year price declines in real estate prices for the first time, I don't know, in a dozen years, where a piece of real estate in Los Angeles or San Diego or Washington or Florida, where the prices are actually lower than what the prices were 1 year ago. Now, they're a lot lower than where they were 6 months ago, but on a year-on-year basis, the declines are not that dramatic. But that's going to change, because 6 months from now, the year-over-year comparisons are going to be to much higher prices. And so 6 months from now, even if real estate prices stay where they are, we can see year-on-year declines of 6 and 7 and 8%. Now, if real estate prices weaken over the next 6 months, as I believe that they will, by the middle of next, by 6 months from now, we're going to be looking at double-digit annual declines in real estate prices, something that's been unprecedented. And that's only the beginning. You know, we've got a long way to go. And I also think that declines in real estate prices are more extreme than what is shown by the numbers, because I think a lot of the new homes that are being sold, I think the prices that are being recorded as sales prices are inaccurate, because they don't reflect all the incentives that the developers threw in to entice the buyers to buy. All the freebies, all the free upgrades and the kickbacks and all that stuff isn't included. They're just including the actual selling price. And so I think prices are a lot weaker. Plus also, what's not picked up in the data are all the houses that are still on the market where the prices have been reduced, but the houses have not sold. So let's say a house was on the market a year ago for $1 million, and it's on the market today for $800,000. You know, the offering price has come down by 20%, but that is not reflected in these figures because there haven't been any transactions. It didn't transact at $1 million, and it didn't transact at $800,000. But it just shows the perception that at one point the homeowner believed that his home was worth $1 million. And today, the same owner believes it's only worth $800,000. That's a 20% decline in his mind, even though that might not show up in the statistics. But as the supply, the inventory now is up at a new record, and as the inventory continues to build, and a lot of these homes that are on the market, actually, the prices are actually reduced enough that somebody buys them, then these transactions will be recorded, and they will work to dramatically depress the year-on-year comparisons, and people will begin to appreciate the gravity of the real estate decline that has already taken place and understand how much more the decline can be. Because remember, you're looking at situations in some of these markets where real estate prices have doubled and tripled. And if prices have doubled and tripled, there's no reason whatsoever why they can't go down by 50% or more to get back to where they were. Because fundamentally, there was no reason for the prices to rise in the first place other than the low interest rates and the speculation that was involved in the market. Well, you take away the low interest rates, you take away the speculation, and you take away the reason for the price to go up. Now, of course, the prices are going to come down. And, of course, why prices went up? Well, we had an excess of buyers and a lack of selling. And, of course, it's the opposite on the way down. You have an excess of selling and a lack of buying. And, you know, what goes up must come down. And it makes perfect sense. And people are going to start to realize that. And I think Wall Street is dramatically underestimating the impact of the U.S. economy, of the bursting of the real estate bubble in so many ways. Anyway, we've got a couple of callers on the line. Let me take a quick break. We're going to play a message on how to get a hold of Euro Pacific Capital. And when we come back, we'll take your calls and move on with the program.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. it's legal to do so. And after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro-Pacific Capital.
Okay, I'm back, and I was just checking the gold prices, up another $3.50 this evening. As I said, the market for precious metals, I think, looks very strong. I'm looking for short-term rally. The way that we recommend it is the Perth Mint Certificate Program. Great way to own gold and silver. If you already own some gold and silver through that, get some more. I mean, remember, silver was up above $15, and now it's about $11. So that's a significant pullback. $15 is not the high. We're going to take that out, I think. And so why wait? Same thing with gold. Gold's around $625. Got as high as $725, $100 off. It's not going down to $550. I don't think so. I think if you're waiting for that price, you're going to be waiting for a long time. You might end up buying $750. So why wait for that? Pick it up at $625. You can call, the number to call directly to talk to Danny Dwyer about the Perth Mint is 800-993-8350. It's 800-993-8350. Or check it out on my website, and we have a website just for the Perth Mint, goldyoucanfold.com. Goldyoucanfold, all one word, .com. But get involved in the Perth Mint before these metals make new highs. Anyway, we've got a couple of callers, so let's go to Peter in Oakland, California. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi, Peter. I just had a quick question. I'm a teacher, so I don't have a huge income, but I do have some. I've about $50,000 in IRA, and I'm in the process of working with one of your brokers to transfer it over to you guys, and I'm really excited about that. But my question, I've never heard you speak about pensions. I've got 8 years in the Chicago teacher's pension, and now I'm not working there anymore, so it's kind of like $20,000 that's dead money. But they say when I turn...
Oh, wait, if you don't work there anymore, generally you can take that pension and roll it over to an IRA.
And that's what I was going to ask, in that with pensions, if you live till you're 95, they end up being a good deal. And I have a feeling you would say in the short run, they're in dollars and dollars are going down. But I've never heard you speak of after 5 years. I'm 42, so I've got another 20 years. And I'm tempted to kind of leave it in there because in 20 years, maybe our economy will be really good.
So I think that if the extent that you have the ability to take a pension and roll it over and take control over the way it's invested so that you can get it out of the dollar, you should definitely do that. I do think, unfortunately, most pensions, if their obligations in dollars, are going to get wiped out. I think a lot of people are going to find that their pensions and their insurance could be practically worthless. That's what happens when you have substantial inflation. I mean, somebody could have, a $1 million insurance policy on their house. But if inflation is bad enough and your house burns down, what if $1 million isn't even enough to cover the nails to rebuild it? Things really get distorted with inflation. The cash values of insurance, like life insurance or pensions, any kind of, especially a fixed pension where you're going to get a set amount, over a lifetime. I mean, these assets are going to get wiped out. I mean, that's the real loss. In order for the government to bail out all the people who have mortgage debt and credit card debt, and student loans and consumer debt. The other side of that is people who have savings, whether it's in the form of pensions or insurance or bank deposits or bonds. Those people have to get wiped out. They have to get sacrificed to spare the debtors. And you don't want to sit there and wait for that. You don't want to be a lamb getting led to the slaughter.
So even if you have years?
Excuse me?
Yeah, I could see that in the short term. If I was retiring in 6 years, I'd be right in the middle of
the longer you're retiring, the further out into the future you go, the less the dollar is likely to be worth.
You don't think it'll rebound?
Crash and then
military power. You don't think somehow we'll that would play an influence if we're still the number one in other realms, that this will be a...
No, you just don't want... It's going to... You know, the further out into the future you go, the less the dollar is going to be worth. So it's just, you know... And so you might as well protect it now. You can always... You know, if the dollar stops falling, you know, we can always take your IRA that we've invested and then, you know, change the way it's allocated. We can always move the money from foreign investments back to domestic investments. But I think if we do it right, you're going to have a lot more income from an IRA that we help you position than any pension that the Oakland teachers are promising to pay.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Peter.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
And let's go to San Antonio, the home of the Alamo, with Jim.
Yes, this is Jim. I just discovered the Europac website in the last 3 or 4 days, and I listened to an archive maybe from last week. So this is the first live broadcast that I've listened to and now participating in.
Well, welcome. But how did you happen to find my website?
Oh, I'm browsing the internet. I'm very into natural resources. So many of my investments are stocks, Freeport-McMoRan, and all sorts of natural resource investments. And somehow it came about. I don't know. I get lost on the internet sometimes. And anyhow, I discovered it.
This time you stumbled onto a good thing.
Now it's a bookmark of mine, so it'll always be there. My question, though, listening to, I think it was last week's report, you are very negative on the situation in the United States, and I agree with that. But it just seems like the United States is the 800-pound gorilla, and if the United States goes down, isn't that just going to create a worldwide catastrophe? And
now, remember, this
who sells the United States is going to...
That question, Jim, that question has been asked and answered by me on this program many, many times. So if you go back into the archives, you will hear this discussion, because you're not the only person to have come to that conclusion. And I think it has to do with the misperception of our true role and understanding the difference between consumption and production. You see, America is the biggest consumer, but we're not the biggest producer. And because we consume so much, what actually happens is the rest of the world has to do without things that they otherwise would get to enjoy were it not for America.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard that.
Yeah, and I mean, what happens is, you know, it's like, you know, we're like little children, and let's say Asia and China, and let's say China and Japan are our parents, and we're little children, and they work hard, and we consume a lot of what they work. I mean, if we were to, you know, grow up and leave home, all of a sudden they would have income, presumably, that they can spend on themselves that used to go to feed and clothe us. And so the world is actually going to be better off. We're an 800-pound gorilla that the world has to carry around on their back. And when they get this giant monkey off their backs, their load is a lot lighter. It's going to be a lot easier for the world to get by without 300 million non-productive Americans consuming everything before they get a chance to. And you borrow everybody's savings that otherwise could be invested more productively than letting us squander it on consumption. Now, there will certainly be some, you know, there'll be some negative ramifications, short-term growing pains, you know, dislocations. You know, the world is, you know, when America collapses and stops consuming, yes, it's going to impact the world, but it's going to impact them in a very favorable way. There will be some winners and losers. Obviously, there are certain factions or people around the world that make a living satisfying the demands of Americans. When Americans no longer have the resources because foreigners are no longer making them available to us, then, you know, we can't consume, and so people who have been profiting from that will suffer. But there will be other people who will come back, who will profit from the resurgent demand for consumption in other parts of the world.
So how,
the winners and losers, but net-net, right, net-net, the world is going to benefit. You know, it's an example. It's like farm subsidies. They're in the news right now. I mean, a lot of farmers get subsidies. And the result of farm subsidies is that food is more expensive than it would be in the absence of subsidies. Now, so we're worse off If you eliminate the farm subsidies, sure, the farmers lose because their subsidized income declines. But society is better off because everybody eats, and now eating is less expensive. So it's similar to that. I mean, there are some factions that are going to lose when the status quo changes. But overall, the world, I mean, the Japanese and the Chinese are going to be far better off because they no longer have to subsidize Americans. Americans, of course, are going to be much worse off because they're going to lose that subsidy.
Is there any way of anticipating what specific ones will be the winners and what ones will be the losers?
Sure. I mean, the companies that we're investing in are companies that are generating income abroad, that are not generating income in the U.S., and those will clearly be the winners. I think in the short run, a lot of the companies that rely heavily on sales to the United States will be hurt. Now, to the extent that they can, change a little bit and retool and focus their production on satisfying the demands outside the United States, then those companies could prosper. Of course, if they can't, if they're producing something that is only in demand in America and they can't, figure out how to reuse the factories or whatever, they'll go out of business. But that's just how it's going to be.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
For Americans, it's going to be a much bigger change because all of a sudden, we're going to go without so many things that we took for granted. One of those things is going to be inexpensive oil to run our cars. I mean, Americans are going to find it extremely expensive to heat their homes and drive their cars. I mean, much, much more than it is today. And the reason that's going to be is because when the dollar collapses, so much more of the world's energy output is going to be consumed by other people. Because as the dollar collapses, it makes the cost of consuming energy higher for Americans while making it cheaper for everybody else. So the rest of the world can afford to consume more, and we can't afford to consume much of it at all.
Okay.
So we get priced out of the market just as they get priced into the market.
Okay.
And everybody keeps looking at, if America stops consuming, see, whatever's produced is going to get produced. So it's all going to get consumed. I mean, by definition, whatever's produced is going to get consumed. The question is, at what price and who's going to do it? And that's what's going to change. When the dollar collapses, the stuff that is still going to get produced, the only difference is going to be who consumes it. It's going to be someone in Japan or someone in China or someone in India or somebody in Europe that's going to consume it as opposed to somebody in America. And that's good for the rest of the world, and that's bad for America. Now, if you're one of our clients and you've got your investments in other countries, then you can be among the people who are the winners because you will own a currency that will gain purchasing power as opposed to a currency that loses purchasing power.
Okay.
Make sense?
Very good. Thank you very much.
All right, sure. And keep on listening, and hopefully you become a client. That's the next step.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Jim.
Bye.
And I've got another caller on hold from Oakland, California. I wonder why we're getting two calls from Oakland today. It's Booker. Go ahead, Booker.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Good.
I'm a client of yours, and my question has two parts. I'll take my answer off the air. The first part is kind of the general. I was just hoping that maybe you could either talk about or even at some point, if you think it's worthwhile, maybe even write about where this country really went so wrong. How did we go from being, in a post-World War II period, the country with the high-paid labor and the best quality goods to being, the last 25 to 30 years has been very difficult for manufacturing this company with a lot of competition from, Asia in particular and their overseas manufacturers. So it'd be good to hear your thoughts on exactly where this country went wrong and what we should do different. And the second part of my question is specifically relates to me personally as a machine shop owner, manufacturing type business, and that is, if you were an owner of a machine shop or a manufacturing type business, would you try to, given what you see coming, would you try to move your business to another country now in order to, maybe be located in an area where, they still have a strong manufacturing sector when the dollar does collapse,
When the dollar collapses, in many respects, or in some respects, it might make it easier for you to manufacture here because certainly the cost of employing Americans will drop dramatically. So you'll have a
So we make high-end luxury-type goods, and nobody here will be able to afford them. Do you think it's better to...
Oh, well, you'll have to be exporting those goods.
Do you think it might be a good idea just to stay here and just become an exporter?
Well, you obviously will become an exporter, but the question is, you know, what will it cost to export? What will the shipping cost be? You know, how much will your raw material cost increase? Will cheap labor be enough to offset some of the other costs? And then you have to look at the tax and regulatory issues.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll go back to your first question because, you know, as to how we got ourselves into this mess, it's a long story. But it has its roots in the movement away from laissez-faire capitalism, from small, limited government, limited taxation, and limited regulation, to the, you know, tax and spend and regulating behemoth that governs us now. And we lost our competitive edge versus the rest of the world, where we had a lot less government than everybody else, which made us more productive. Now we have as much government as many countries, and a lot more government than a lot of countries. And so government, you know, a big government is now a competitive disadvantage to the United States.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, if you determined as a manufacturing type business owner that you would not be able to be an exporter because, for one thing, you know, a lot of our raw materials are going to be our imports.
Yeah, look, it's not, America is in a lot of trouble, and I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, in general, most business owners would be better off operating in another country. That's the sad truth.
Have you got any suggestions, like Canada or Australia or Europe, or
if you can move over there, I mean, you know, chances are you're going to be better off. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, if we get huge reforms, free market reforms, in the aftermath of this collapse, meaning that the government slashes regulations, slashes spending and taxation, then America could be a relatively attractive place for manufacturing. You know, we could be the cheap labor, a low-cost market. You know, if we have if we can combine low regulation with low wages. Now, what we're not going to have is low capital costs because we have no domestic savings. So we're still going to have relatively high rates of interest. I mean, what really made America wealthy in the first place is because we had such a high savings rate that we had the best of all worlds. We had low capital costs, we had low regulation, and we were able to pay high wages and still be the most competitive country in the world. That's the best situation for workers because workers get to be competitive and have high wages. But if you have high capital costs because you have low savings and you have high regulatory and government costs, the only way you can make up for it is for your people to work for next to nothing. And unfortunately, that's the situation that we're going to be in. And, you know, the reason that this situation was able to go the way it has the last 20 or 30 years or more was because the world accepted the dollar as the world's reserve currency. And if that were not the case, you know, we would have had to have paid the piper a long time ago. And as a result, the bill wouldn't have been as high. Because the world was letting us run up in debts that are unprecedented in global history, by the time we have to pay the piper, it could bankrupt us. But there are no other countries that have been able to get into such a deep mess on such a grand scale because the free market forces would have imposed discipline long ago. But we've been able to avoid that discipline by virtue of the dollar being the world reserve currency. But, you know, nothing lasts forever. And the dollar's reserve currency status is not going to be the exception. And I think, you know, it could come to an end very soon.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I appreciate your opinion. I think, you know, maybe someday if you get the time, you should write about some of these topics and put it down in writing.
I'm writing a book right now. I talked about that. I finished the first 6 chapters. So a lot of this is going to be in my book. So, you know, buy a copy. It'll be out in March.
All right. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks again, Peter.
All right, Booker. Anyway, let me take one more commercial break. Again, these commercials are important because they let you know how to get a hold of Euro Pacific Capital. I think there are brokers working even now, even as late as 8:40 in the the East Coast, the Connecticut office. But I also have brokers in Phoenix and California. But let's play the message, and we'll pick it up for the remaining phone calls in the last segment.
Euro-Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro-Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro-Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. The phone number to call, we still have some time to take some calls. The number to call is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. Anyway, let's go back to the phone calls. I've got Lyle on the line from Chicago, Illinois. Go ahead, Lyle.
Hey, Peter. How's it going? I have a question. I have some, I already have some mining stocks that are from Canadian companies. Mm-hmm. However, some of them are on the Amex, and I have the Amex shares, but they are Canadian companies. I was wondering how these shares are actually going to do when the dollar starts to depreciate.
Well, again, you know, these shares are a function of generally the, what's happening in the gold market and, of course, what's happening in particular to these companies. I mean, if they're exploration companies or they actually have reserves, but the dollar in general is going to act inverse. Gold is going to act inverse to the dollar. And so anything that's good for gold will be good for those mining shares. It doesn't really matter whether they're trading in Canada or whether they're trading in the U.S. or Australia. They're basically a gold stock, a function of the gold price. And so you're going to get the benefit of a rising gold price regardless of where your shares are listed.
So you don't think...
Now, certainly, you know, depending on where the mine is located, right, if the mine is in Canada and all their costs of production are in Canadian dollars and the price of gold rises in American dollars, but due to an increase in the value of the Canadian dollar, it doesn't rise in Canadian dollars, then that could impact the profitability of the company if it's actually mining. If it's not mining or just in the exploration stage, it probably won't even affect it. But if it's a producing gold company and it has earnings, you know, it's important for that company that the price of gold rise, not just in terms of the dollar, but in terms of its cost of production. But it's my thinking that it will. I mean, I think gold is undervalued dramatically at the current price. And I think it has a long way to go to catch up to where it should be, given the tremendous increase in the amount of fiat currencies in circulation over the past decade or so or two, relative to how much gold has been mined and is, you know, exists in the world.
So you don't see any real major negative effects of a stock that's trading on the Amex as opposed
to... No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I think sometimes some of the best opportunities in the mining sector are not listed on the Amex. But certainly, the ones that are, it doesn't mean that they're at a disadvantage because they're trading in the United States. But I think you might find some of your best valuations in Australia or in Canada, simply because generally there's not as many people looking in those markets. The U.S. market is probably one of the most highly scrutinized markets, followed markets, traded markets. And so it's harder to really get a good bargain because there's so many people looking for them in the U.S.
Yeah, I've noticed
a lot of people looking for them abroad.
Sorry, a couple of the stocks that I've had were in Toronto Exchange and then came over to Amex, and I noticed like a very large increase in price as soon as it came over to Amex.
Yeah, a lot of times that's one of the reasons, that's one of the major incentives for listing is because the increased exposure results in more demand and a higher price, which is one of the strategies that we have at Euro-Pacific Capital. We generally, once the stocks are trading on the U.S., we don't necessarily recommend them anymore. We start buying them before they get to the U.S. when they're a lot cheaper. And we have so many stocks that we were buying for clients 3 and 4 or 5 years ago that are now listed in the United States that were not listed in the United States when we were buying them. Of course, if you waited for the listing in the U.S. to buy them, you paid many, many times what our clients were able to pay for buying them on the local markets. But that's definitely true of the Canadian stocks, but not nearly the case for stocks in other countries. I mean, Canada is one thing, but most of these other countries, especially with Sarbanes-Oxley, you know, the foreign companies are going to be increasingly hesitant to list their shares here.
Okay.
So it's more important that you work with, you know, a company like Euro Pacific Capital, where really, you know, you're not encumbered by borders. You know, we can trade stocks pretty much anywhere in the world, and so we don't have to just look in the U.S. markets for value.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for answering my question.
All right. Great. And thanks for your call. Are you a client right now? Yeah, we lost the caller. Just checking the price of gold, continuing to rise, now up $5.50 off the New York close. And across the board, I mean, things are picking up. We've got silver, you know, now moving above $11 an ounce, a platinum above $1,220, palladium solid above $1,310. The whole complex is looking very constructive. And I think, you know, we created a lot of bearishness in that last drop. And I think that really has sown the seeds for an explosive rally. As I said, you know, some of the fair weather bulls, like my friend Joe Battipaglia, who had debated me a couple of times in the money shows, and I was a little nervous to have Joe as a gold bull. I was very happy that a few weeks ago, when Joe and I were on Cudlow & Company, he admitted that he got out of his gold positions and he was no longer bullish. And I'm glad, because Joe's, I mean, he's a big guy, too. Literally, he's a lot of weight. And now that we've got rid of that excess baggage, I think it's a lot easier for the market to make new highs. I have no idea when Joe's going to be back on board, but I'm sure by the time he is, it won't be long before we have another correction. But I would not expect to see Battipaglia or some of the other fair weather gold bulls back into the market until gold is probably above 800, 850, 1,000, until we've really made new highs. So I think we've got some clear sailing for a while. And you know, their arguments, they were buying gold stocks for nonsense reasons. They were buying it because, you know, jewelry demand, or because they thought the strong economy was going to be bullish for gold, because wealthier people, everybody was going to be richer, and so they were going to want more gold. I mean, there was nothing negative to the increase in the price of gold. It wasn't a messenger or a harbinger of any kind of problems on the horizon. Gold was rising. It was a good thing. You know, everything is good. And that's how Wall Street spends it. But I'm not really sure. I haven't checked the calendar as to what the new economic data is that's coming out. I think we might get the jobs report coming up. I don't know if it's this week or next. You know, the most recent numbers that came out recently were those inflation numbers, which came out a little hotter than people have been looking. You know, I talked a lot about this rent and the owner's equivalent rent, and I talked a couple of years ago about the situation that exists today. But I just read a report, I think California was looking for the biggest rent increases in, I don't know, you know, a dozen years or so. They're looking for rents to increase about 8% on the year. And, you know, those are big numbers, you know, especially when rents are 40% of the core CPI. You know, these numbers are really starting to move. And food prices, agriculture prices, you know, they're moving up. Oil prices have been moving up. They're going to continue to move up. You know, I mean, inflation is going to continue to become more and more obvious out there. And now, right now, you've got people on Wall Street. Yes, they're acknowledging that inflation is picking up a little bit, but it's not making them nervous because they believe it's temporary. They believe this temporary pickup in inflation will be offset by the contraction in the economy, by the slowdown. That the slowdown is going to check inflation. And so there's no need to worry about the uptick in inflation now, because that's backward looking, that the weakening economy is going to counteract that, and ultimately the inflation numbers are going to roll over, and that is just wrong on so many counts. But it shows a basic lack of understanding of what inflation is and where it comes from, because inflation is not a byproduct of economic growth, and the fact that growth slows down does not mean that inflation is going to slow down. In fact, if you really understand the dynamics behind consumer prices and what makes them rise, what keeps them from rising or makes them fall is economic growth. And so if we get less growth, rather than retarding the increase in consumer prices, it will stimulate that increase. Because, you know, prices rise for supply and demand reasons, right? I mean, demand. And in an economic slowdown, you will have less demand, but you will also have less supply, because less goods are being produced or less goods are being imported into the country. And so if supply contracts faster than demand, prices are going to rise, even in an environment of falling demand, because what determines the price is demand relative to supply. And when you have a strong economy that is really strong and producing goods, or goods are being imported, then you're on the supply side. I mean, you can have supply growing faster than demand. So you can have a growing economy, but you can have prices falling because supply is growing even faster. And that's a good thing. You know, it's always a good thing to have more stuff that's less expensive. It's only a negative thing once Wall Street gets a chance to put their ridiculous Keynesian spin on things. But I think it's going to, you know, start to be obvious at some point after the knee-jerk reaction that inflation is not going to be contained by the slowdown, and that the slowdown is not a slowdown but an outright recession. And then I do think you're going to see the U.S. markets really come under some serious pressure. But I also think that you will see a decoupling of the U.S. markets from some of the global markets and things like precious metals. I mean, right now, everything kind of moves together. Everything is the returns are all correlated. We're getting better returns abroad. We're getting better returns in metals than we are in U.S. stocks. I mean, hands down. But, you know, the returns are all moving in the same direction. You know, the U.S. market just goes up slower or down more than these other assets, but they're still moving in the same direction. Ultimately, I look for them to decouple and move in opposite directions. And then I think you can really see a pickup in things like, you know, precious metals prices. But in the meantime, it's a good time to be buying, even though you're going to see a general rise across the board in assets. Now, I think the exception, obviously, is real estate. I mean, real estate is done going up. I mean, real estate in the United States has only one way to go. And that's down. And you know, there's just nothing else that can happen. The overbuilding has been extreme. And the problem is, so many of the properties that were sold in the last several years were sold to speculators and flippers. So they weren't really sold. They were just temporarily off the market, and they're coming back on because the flippers and the speculators realize that they can't flip them for a profit. And since there isn't a viable rental market, they can't rent them out to cover the negative cash flow associated with paying their mortgage, particularly if the mortgage was not fixed and is now rising to reflect higher short-term rates. All these properties are coming back on the market. And, of course, they're coming back on the market in an environment where there's very few buyers. Because when the speculators were buying, there were plenty of other speculators that they were bidding against. There was a real market for these properties. That market is gone, you know, because there's not another speculator, you know, that's willing to buy. Once the speculators turn into sellers, I mean, there's nobody left. So this is happening. This is real. This is happening right now. And it's amazing, you know, the extent to which the investment community and the real estate community can look at these numbers and be sanguine or think that this is just a mild slowdown. Prices will just level off for a while before moving higher. I mean, why should they move higher? Why should they, I mean, forget about that. Why should they stay where they are? I mean, not with the interest rates where they are, not with the glut of unsold property where it is, and not, you know, and with the speculators coming to their senses and not wanting to buy, you know, there's no reason for these prices not to collapse. And then, of course, you know, people are underestimating by a significant margin the degree to which the economy depends on the perpetual inflation of that housing bubble, not because of the jobs that it creates in housing construction and remodeling, but all the jobs that are created based on the financing of a house. I mean, when people buy a house, it's not like when, you know, that they're buying, you know, some groceries. There are a lot of, there's a mortgage involved. There's appraisers involved. There's a lot involved in the act of buying a house that is not there when other products are consumed. So there are a lot of jobs that are specifically tied to this activity. And when the activity goes away, the jobs that were tied to them are no longer needed and they go away. And of course, there's a lot of consumption that is specifically related to building, such as, you know, remodeling and the materials, the labor associated with doing things. But a lot of jobs associated with selling the furniture and you buy a house or you want to sell your house, you know, you get a realtor involved and there are commissions involved. I mean, if you want to go buy, you know, an ordinary item, you want to go buy a television set, you don't hire somebody to help you do it. You don't go around and take an agent with you to shop and help you get the best TV. You can do it yourself. But when you go and look for a house, yeah, you get a realtor on board that helps you. So all those jobs are going away. All those jobs are going away. And of course, all the jobs that are the result of the spending of the money that real estate wealth allowed homeowners to spend, not only because of the ability to extract that wealth in the form of a cash out, but the perception of the reduced need to save because you had so much wealth in your home, there was no need to set aside any money out of your paycheck every week, so why not spend it all? And all that extra consumption results in employment and economic activity, and all that's going to go away when the impetus behind that extra consumption is gone. And of course, at the same token, people are overlooking the fact that interest rates were so low. And so many homeowners took advantage of the low interest rates to use interest-only and adjust-rate mortgages so that they temporarily paid very little in interest. And that freed up a lot of money for discretionary spending. All that spending is going to stop when their mortgage interest rates are reset. And all these people did is they sacrificed their future consumption to consume in the present. Well, the problem is the future is here. The future has arrived, and so has the time for diminished consumption. And that means recession. You know, 70%+ of our economy is consumption. And I don't think we've ever had a period of time, in post-war history at least, maybe ever, where Americans have consumed less in 1 year than the prior, where there was actually a contraction in consumer spending. I mean, I think we're headed there. And I think it's not going to even be a minor contraction, but it's going to be a major contraction. Anyway, we're coming down to the end of the show, a couple minutes left. So look, I want to, you know, draw everybody's attention to the website at www.europac.net. Make sure and go there as often as possible, every day preferably. There are great articles I put on that site every day that you got to read. Also, my economic commentary is there. Of course, you listen to this webcast there. My television appearances are there. You can get access to your account. People are listening to this broadcast and don't know that. You can get account access through my website. It's all free. Also, there are some great research reports there. There's my Jimmy Rogers interview. It's a great interview with Jimmy Rogers. If you haven't read it, you got to download it. It's probably the most candid interview I've seen him give. We've also got the Powerful Case for Investing in Foreign Equities. Download that report. And give us a call. The number is 800-727-7922. I know I owe everybody a newsletter. We're late. The Global Investor. Hopefully next week we're going to get out another issue of the newsletter. If you're not getting a newsletter, make sure you're signed up, or make sure that we're not being blocked by spam blocker. Anyway, thanks a lot. Talk to you all next week. We're out of time. This is Peter Schiff, signing off.